It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Finally, with respect to our recommendation to the Department of Justice, in our system, the prosecutors make the decisions about whether charges are appropriate based on evidence that the FBI helps collect. Although we don't normally make public our recommendations to the prosecutors, we frequently make recommendations and engage in productive conversations with prosecutors about what resolution may be appropriate given the evidence. In this case, given the importance of the matter, I think unusual transparency is in order. Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case. Prosecutors necessarily weigh a number of factors before deciding whether to bring charges. There are obvious considerations like the strength of the evidence, especially regarding intent. Responsible decisions also consider the context of a person's actions and how similar situations have been handled in the past. In looking back at our investigations into the mishandling or removal of classified information, we cannot find a case that would support bringing criminal charges on these facts. All the cases prosecuted involved some combination of clearly intentional and willful mishandling of classified information, or vast quantities of information exposed in such a way as to support an inference of intentional misconduct, or indications of disloyalty to the United States, or efforts to obstruct justice. We do not see those things here. To be clear, this is not to suggest that in similar circumstances, a person who engaged in this activity would face no consequences. To the contrary, those individuals are often subject to security or administrative sanctions, but that's not what we're deciding now. As a result, although the Department of Justice makes final decisions on matters like this, we are expressing to Justice our view that no charges are appropriate in this case.
Well, that was a stunning announcement from the director of the FBI, James Comey, yesterday at about 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I'm not sure anyone really saw that coming. I don't think most people expected that Hillary Clinton would be prosecuted for lots of reasons, for political reasons, because let's see, Bill Clinton met with Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, on the tarmac at Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix just last week. Very, very inappropriate, really a meeting that prosecutor would never meet with a potential defendant or potential suspect in an investigation, and yet they did that. So no one knows exactly what happened there. I think most of us thought that, you know, the attorney general would never prosecute Hillary Clinton, and it is the attorney general and the Justice Department that is tasked with making the decision. The FBI is supposed to bring the evidence. They're the prosecutor. They gather the evidence. They present what they found. And the Justice Department is supposed to make that decision. So it was stunning, honestly, that the FBI director, after laying out in great detail of the things that Hillary Clinton actually did do that violated the law, that put the nation at risk, and then he says that no reasonable prosecutor would bring charges. Well, I want you to, don't take my word for it. Let me just give you a couple of friends of James Comey, and they are well-placed friends. I want you to hear what they have to say about this. Mike Mukasey was attorney general during the last part of George W. Bush's presidency. Mike Mukasey is not, as far as I know, a Republican. He's a tough prosecutor, but he's not a partisan at all. So just by way of explanation. But he says, it is a felony for anyone entrusted with lawful possession of information relating to national defense to permit it through gross negligence to be removed from its proper place of custody and disclosed. Gross negligence rather than purposeful conduct is enough. Yet Mr. Comey appears to have based his recommendation not to prosecute on the absence of clear evidence that Secretary Clinton and her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information. Though he did say in the same sentence that there was evidence they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. He says to be extremely careless in the handling of information that's sensitive is synonymous with being grossly negligent. A felony statute requires no such evidence, no such intent. The misdemeanor involves simply the knowing removal of classified documents to an unauthorized location. That is the statute to which David Petraeus, the former U.S. Army general and Central Intelligence Agency director, pleaded guilty in 2015. He had disclosed classified documents to his biographer, mistress, who, by the way, had a top secret clearance, returned the information to him and never disclosed it in his biography or elsewhere. Criminal intent of the usual sort, as noted, is not a requirement of either statute. Mr. Comey didn't explain why, with evidence clearly fulfilling the requirements of the two statutes involved, no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case, except for the director's inaccurate assertion that it had never been done before. It may be that someday there will be the usual transparency, disclosure of facts. Well, that day was not Tuesday, and it is little wonder that many in and out of government were left both puzzled and dismayed. Now, remember that Mike Mukasey is a New Yorker. He was a U.S. Attorney General again from 2007 to 2009, and he served as a U.S. District Judge for the Southern District of New York. He's very close friends with Andy McCarthy. Andy was the prosecutor of the Blind Sheikh. Andy's been our guest many, many times. I'm sure you've seen him all over television. And Andy's very close to James Comey, and this is what Andy McCarthy writes. In essence, in order to give Mrs. Clinton a pass, the FBI rewrote the statute, inserting an intent element that Congress did not require. The added intent element, moreover, makes no sense. The point of having a statute that criminalizes gross negligence is to underscore that government officials have a special obligation to safeguard national defense secrets. When they fail to carry out that obligation due to gross negligence, they are guilty of serious wrongdoing. The lack of intent to harm our country is irrelevant. People never intend the bad things that happen due to gross negligence. And he says, I think highly of Jim Comey personally and professionally, but this makes no sense to me. I was especially unpersuaded by Director Comey's claim that no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case based on the evidence uncovered by the FBI. To my mind, a reasonable prosecutor would ask, why did Congress criminalize the mishandling of classified information through gross negligence? The answer, obviously, is to prevent harm to national security. So then the reasonable prosecutor asks, was the statute clearly violated? And if yes, is it likely that Mrs. Clinton's conduct caused harm to national security? If those two questions are answered in the affirmative, I believe many, if not most, reasonable prosecutors would feel obliged to bring the case. I want to skip ahead to a report by James Rosen last night. He does kind of a little profile of James Comey, and it reminded me of some things I had forgotten. Who is this man? People seem to trust him, believe in him. They think he's upright. But James Rosen has a report that I think gives us kind of a fuller picture. Let's listen.
Jim Comey is also to know his fierce independence and his deep integrity.
Indeed, from his service on the Senate Whitewater Committee, as a U.S. attorney in New York, a brief tenure as deputy attorney general, and now as head of the FBI, James Comey, all 6'8" of him, has always enjoyed a reputation in lay terms as a Boy Scout.
And I think that that reputation will maintain itself afterwards. And I think it's really hard to judge, to second guess his judgment without being on the investigative team. But I don't have any doubt that he made the judgment that he thinks is appropriate in the case.
With the disclosure that Attorney General Loretta Lynch met privately with former President Clinton in Phoenix last week, and Lynch's subsequent decision, short of a recusal, to accept whatever recommendations the FBI and career prosecutors offered in the Clinton case, many analysts saw Comey's lengthy statement as an effort to preserve the Bureau's reputation and his own.
None of that mattered to us. Only facts matter. And the FBI found them here in an entirely apolitical and professional way.
I have a lot of respect for Jim, but I'll tell you something. The fix was in on this from the beginning.
After the terrorist attacks of 9/11, President Bush and Vice President Cheney set up a terrorist surveillance program. Attorney General John Ashcroft signed off on it multiple times. But when Ashcroft fell ill and delegated his powers to his deputy, Comey refused to reauthorize the program and raced to Ashcroft's hospital room to head off White House officials gathering there. Comey told President Bush he and other top officials would resign if the language wasn't amended. The president backed down. It was also Comey who appointed the special prosecutor that won a conviction against Mr. Cheney's chief of staff, Scooter Libby.
I think we have seen Jim Comey throughout his career demonstrate, I think, over and over again, that he's a little bit of a rogue actor when it comes to politics. He's definitely not a loyal Republican, and is definitely willing to do what it takes to get the favor of the Democrats and the liberal elite. I think he's done it again.
You know, I think that's absolutely accurate. And it certainly, you know, whatever his motivations, the net gain is that he hasn't been a loyal Republican under Bush. When he went after Scooter Libby, he was not acting as a loyal Republican. But now he does everything he can, backflips, to protect Mrs. Clinton. So one has to ask, really, the hard questions. When we return, Ambassador John Bolton will join us. I'm sure he has some thoughts on this since he was at the State Department under Bush. And I'm anxious to talk to him about that. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Did you know that the Arlington National Cemetery was originally built during the Civil War? That's right. It was the home of Robert E. Lee, actually, who was the general of the Confederacy. Little known fact about the Arlington National Cemetery, which today is an iconic tribute to our fallen heroes. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll visit the Arlington National Cemetery in September on our spiritual heritage tour, as well as going to many other sites in our nation's capital. We'll also go to the home of George Washington, Mount Vernon. In addition, Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown will be a place we visit just prior to our nation's capital. So if you'd like to go on either of these tours in September, or both, we welcome you to find out all the information at the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
With today's Faith to Action commentary, here's Janet Porter.
The world mocks us. That is what's being tweeted following the Pentagon's announcement to open the doors of the U.S. military to transgenders. Over the objections of top military officials, the Obama administration has not only forced the military to become part of the homosexual social experiment, they are also forcing us to pay for treatments and surgeries that mutilate healthy body parts to coincide with people's gender confusion. So now, the military is being forced to play the game of pretend for men who think they are women and women who think they are men, which the American Psychiatric Association calls gender dysphoria, a certified mental disorder. So, while ISIS grows in power, our military is focused on transgenders.
Visit F2A.org for more commentaries and action steps, along with news, links, and much more for your state. Go to F2A.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. The Fort Des Moines Church of Christ has filed a federal lawsuit against the Iowa Civil Rights Commission. They contend the government's trying to censor the church's teachings on biblical sexuality and forcing them to open bathrooms to transgender people. I first alerted you to this story yesterday. A separate church has filed a complaint with the Civil Rights Commission alleging similar accusations. At issue is a directive that indicates churches who have daycare centers and churches that welcome the public to their worship services must comply with public accommodation laws. Attorneys for both congregations say that means pastors could face penalties for preaching against homosexuality, and they would not be allowed to restrict bathroom access to transgender visitors. Every pastor in America should pay heed to what's happening in the Hawkeye State, because your church could be next. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
When I think back to when I first stood for UKIP, well, in fact, when I first stood for anybody, in the Eastleigh by-election, which took place in 1994, and I managed to scrape past screaming Lord Such by a massive 164 votes. And to have gone from that to being part of a national campaign that attracted 17.5 million votes for Brexit says to me that tough though it's been at times, it has certainly all been worth it. I came into politics from business because I believed that this nation should be self-governing. I have never been, and I have never wanted to be, a career politician. My aim in being in politics was to get Britain out of the European Union. That is what we voted for in that referendum 2 weeks ago. And that is why I now feel that I've done my bit, that I couldn't possibly achieve more than we managed to get in that referendum. And so I feel it's right that I should now stand aside.
All
as
right,
leader.
That's Nigel Farage stepping down. I think many people were shocked. He stepped down from the UKIP party in Britain after leading that charge to remove Britain from the European Union. And I want to talk about that with our guest, and we're going to do that because Ambassador John Bolton has just joined us. Ambassador, good morning, and thank you.
Glad to be with you. Thank you for having me.
You know that before we talk about this, I have to ask you about Hillary Clinton. You were at the State Department for all those years. You know the culture. You know the rules when it comes to classified information. What do you think? Were you surprised by Comey's conclusion yesterday?
Yes, I was. I was stunned, in fact, because I thought that certainly the FBI and indeed I thought the career-level prosecutors at the Justice Department would see this for what it was. It was a clear violation of the statute that makes gross negligence the standard when you allow classified materials to be put in positions where they can be compromised, where our adversaries can get them. In fact, the speech that Comey made, the first 10 minutes of it yesterday, was like an opening statement to a jury, laying out all of the reasons why Hillary Clinton and her aides had met that standard for prosecution. And then at the end he said, but, you know, I couldn't find other cases that supported it, so I'm going to recommend no prosecution. It was internally contradictory. I ascribe it not to corruption. I don't think Comey is corrupt. I certainly don't think the FBI agents who worked on this case are corrupt. I ascribe it to Comey's cowardice. I think he was humiliated when he didn't get the charges and the penalties he wanted in the Petraeus investigation. I think he was afraid of being rejected again, or even if justice had decided to prosecute, he was afraid that they might have lost the case and that that would be devastating to him personally. I now believe that a lot of the career FBI people who worked on this investigation should be contacted by the press. I normally don't like this kind of thing, but honestly, I don't think justice was served here. I think the FBI was badly damaged by what Comey did, and I think we've got to do something to restore faith in our criminal justice system, because we're already in an environment where the people don't trust the government. This is only going to make it worse.
I agree, and I think, you know, the FBI's kind of been the last bastion. I think people thought, well, we can trust Comey. We can trust the FBI. We've been hearing all these reports, you know, there'd be mass resignations and indignation. The only thing, other thing is, John, in regard to the investigations in the Clinton Foundation, that we don't know anything about that yet. Could that other shoe drop, you think?
Well, it's a very good question. I've been thinking about it myself. It's certainly true that Comey said nothing about the corruption issue yesterday, but I don't think that points us in any particular direction. It could well mean that that part of the investigation is in the tank now, too, or it could mean that he fully intended to separate these as cleanly as he could, and that that case continues. I think we're going to require more reporting to know the answer to that. Certainly that case should continue too, but it could be that, as he described the FBI's inability to get at anything like a significant number of the 30,000 deleted emails because of the way the Clinton lawyers scrubbed the machine, it could be that there were tantalizing signs of a corruption investigation in there, but just not enough that they've been able to piece together. Had they gotten all those emails, it would have been different. That's also, by the way, why when Comey said he saw no evidence of obstruction of justice, which would have been a factor that that magnified the concern over the security violation, my God, there was obstruction of justice. There's still obstruction of justice. I don't care whether it was intended to conceal evidence or not. The notion that they could just unilaterally decide what emails to produce and to erase the rest had to be made consciously, that they knew that they were eliminating any possibility of anybody looking at those emails. And if you look at the history of the Clintons and the State Department stonewalling multiple Freedom of Information Act requests for months and even years, with political appointees in the department reviewing the department's response to the FOIA request, which is also unprecedented. I think there's plenty of obstruction of justice to go around here.
Oh, well, of course, I agree. And I was just thinking, as you were talking, this is what happens to a society when honesty and integrity, oath-keeping, promises, your word means nothing. This is what happens, you know, and it's the reason why our founding fathers said that there's no law. There aren't enough laws to legislate the unruliness of men's hearts. You know, men have to take personal responsibility, have to have character on their own. And when they lose character, we have a total breakdown. We just don't have enough laws to cover all the lies.
I think that this is where Comey's cowardice here is the most damaging of all. We don't know everything that went behind it. I certainly don't put anything past the Obama administration. But if he was intimidated, or if somehow or another the Bill Clinton approached Loretta Lynch and urging her, or the campaign urging Loretta Lynch to consider staying on after Hillary was elected, I tell you, if any of that were to prove out, it would mean that they had touched the untouchables. And it would mean we had become a third world country. It's very disturbing.
It really is. All right. Well, much more could be said about that. But I want, before I lose you, because I know you have to be on Fox in a few minutes, I want to talk about Brexit, because you were in London during the vote, the shocking vote, really, to remove Great Britain from the European Union. And Nigel Farage, of course, was the leader of the UK Independence Party. He led that. Now he's stepping aside as the leader, which surprised me. But I guess the question is this, John. I know that you were in favor of the breakaway. I was too, but I don't know nearly as much about it as you do. The pound fell. Now the pound is back up. They're, you know, talking about all these terrible things that are going to happen, all the turmoil and unrest. But how do you see it? Do you see it as playing out the way you might have hoped? I know it's a little early, but what do you think?
Well, I think it's a revolutionary decision, and any revolution has costs as well as benefits. We have to be honest about that. But if you look at the reaction of the financial markets, just to take them, continental European stock markets are down more than the British stock market, and that's because it shows where the balance of advantage was, even economically here. So I think this means great changes within the European Union. I don't think it will look anything like it does today in 5 or 10 years. But fundamentally, to me, it was never an economic decision. It was a decision about self-government. And the British people decided, thank you very much, they could govern themselves. They didn't need bureaucrats in Brussels regulating them the way it has been. And I think that reflects a profound sense across Europe. And I think in many ways it reflects the sense in America that we are collectively tired of the Washington politicians trying to dictate not only how we conduct our business affairs, but how we speak, what's politically correct, what we're allowed to think, how we conduct our religion, and on and on and on. So politicians can either heed this or they can pay the consequences.
One last question before you leave us. I am confused about what this does to NATO. And, you know, there are a lot of accusations. And, I mean, is Britain going to be still a part of NATO? Are they, you know, is the EU going to be part of NATO? How's that going to work out?
Well, absolutely. Britain remains a key member of NATO, and I think Britain's withdrawal from the European Union actually will strengthen NATO, and here's why. Too many Europeans, in France and Germany in particular, were trying to make the EU into a more militarily capable organization, and the reason was clear. For the same reason they wanted ever closer union among the EU countries, they want to make the EU into a super state. And in global affairs, they want it to be an alternative. In a multipolar world, they want it to be an alternative pole to the United States. Now, that's not the language of allies, but of competitors at best. The European Union has done next to nothing to contribute to the security of Europe. It's been entirely because of NATO. And NATO has something that the European Union will never have, namely the United States. I think the countries of Central and Eastern Europe understand that. They are the ones most at risk today from an assertive, almost belligerent Russia, the Baltic republics, Poland, Romania, Bulgaria. And they're going to prize the continuing U.S. role in Europe. So this gives us a chance to, I think, fundamentally change the European Union, strengthen NATO. I think it's a win-win, but I think we've got to break through the culture of the bubble in London and New York and Washington that couldn't conceive life outside the European Union. They better start thinking about it now.
Yeah, all right. Well, Ambassador John Bolton, always a pleasure, and thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, Sandy, many thanks for having me.
Okay, my pleasure. All right, well, you know what, as an addendum to that, one of the things this is really interesting to me, and it ties into NATO, ties into what's happening internationally. You know, the Turkish leader Erdogan, E-R-D-O-G-A-N, Erdogan, has been in power for a long time. He's not very old. He's only 62. Turkey was so westernized, it was a secular Islamic state. And that was accomplished under a famous Turkish leader who's a hero to many in Turkey, named Atatürk. That's his name, Atatürk. He has another name, but that's the only part of his name I can remember, Atatürk. But he had a vision for a secular Islamic state, and that's what they accomplished. And under Erdogan's leadership in the early parts of it, he took over claiming that he believed that, or at least in part, Turkey's economy just boomed. And when I was there six years ago, I guess it was gorgeous. I mean, just beautiful people working, very prosperous people, well-dressed. Of course, the history in Turkey is just phenomenal. The biblical history, untouched, much more untouched than it is in Israel. But Erdogan gradually became more of an Islamist. And he struck up a friendship with this Fethullah Gulen, who has established all of these Islamic schools here in America under the guise of what's the STEM? Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. The Fethullah Gulen schools are just spreading all over. They go by a different name. I can't even remember the name, but those of you in Texas probably know all about this. So Erdogan gradually became more and more of an Islamist. And remember that President Obama claimed that he was the world leader he was close to. Erdogan was the world leader that President Barack Obama was closest to. So now Erdogan is becoming more and more erratic. And I'm reading this morning that he is actually moving. And now just let me say this and I'll try to explain it. He is moving toward changing the law because his party controls the Democratic branch, whatever they call that, whatever they call their body. His party controls it. And they are in the process of changing the laws so that Erdogan can become president for life. And it's interesting because I remember this. Okay, stay with me. I remember hearing from a Venezuelan friend whose name escapes me this moment. I used to interview him a lot. I wish I could think of it. But he was explaining to me that the Sao Paulo Forum in the Western Hemisphere, led by Castro, after the Russians, after the Cold War and Russia diminished, shrank, and their influence in South America and in the Southern Hemisphere, Western Hemisphere, shrunk, that in the past, you know, they were taking over governments through military efforts, through coups, Sandinistas, and they did it through warfare. But they had discovered a new way of taking over, and that was to work, get elected democratically, work through the democratic process to take full power. That's what Hugo Chavez did in Venezuela, and there are other countries as well. And so it's interesting to me that Erdogan is doing the same thing in Turkey, apparently. Elected democratically, gradually taking over the elected body, and then changing the laws so that he is in place for life. And I'm telling you this because you know why I'm saying this. This is where I think the left is headed in our country. And we just have to be aware. And they have had much more success, the left has, certainly in South America, taking over using the democratic process than they ever had with military coups. So I just think that's interesting, and I wanted to share that with you. I'd like to do this. We're going to talk more about Director Comey's statements yesterday, but I would be really curious to know. I'm guessing that most of you who listen to this show, not all of you, because some are not, you know, are not friends of the things that I say, not in agreement at all. And I'd love to hear from you, too. But I would really like to know if you think, or how you think, Comey's announcement is going to be heard by Americans. And I suppose, you know, that it's a given that for those of us that are already suspicious of Hillary Clinton, suspicious of Barack Obama and this administration, you know, it's an obvious. But how about those that are not really all that clued in, not paying that much attention, college students, neighbors, even Democratic friends of yours? I just wonder how you think they're hearing this and what you think. You think this is going to, now it'll be reported that the FBI said not to bring charges, everything's fine, and it will just move on. Or do you think there's going to be some residual effect? I'd really like to know. And our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. I would really like to know what you think the reactions of people, maybe you've already heard some reactions from people that you would like to tell us about. You know, Donald Trump weighed in North Carolina last night, and he actually made a very good point. Let's listen to clip eight.
So give the grandchildren 2 minutes. Give the golf 3.5 minutes. That's a long time to be sitting there twiddling your thumbs. What else are we going to talk about? Let's talk about Hillary. Let's talk about Hillary. Did you see today Hillary announced that she may consider the attorney general? I'm not casting aspersions on anybody other than Hillary, of course. But she may consider the attorney general, who's ruling on her case now. Now they're ruling on the case, to continue forward as attorney general. Now, how do you make that statement when they are going to rule? Because remember what happened. The FBI makes their recommendation, and then still it's up to the attorney general's office. So Hillary said today, at least according to what I saw on television, which you can't always believe. I actually found it hard to believe she'd say this. But she said today that we may consider the attorney general to go forward. That's like a bribe, isn't it? Isn't that sort of a bribe? I think it's a bribe. I mean, that if she wins, she's going to consider extending the attorney general. And you know what? I'm not knocking the attorney general. What I'm saying is, how can you say that? It's a bribe. I mean, the attorney general is sitting there saying, you know, if I get Hillary off the hook, I'm going to have 4 more years or 8 more years. But if she loses, I'm out of a job. It's a bribe. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. She is laughing at the stupidity of our system. She is laughing, and so is her husband, Bill, laughing at what's going on. Because, and they've been there before, you know it. They've been there between Whitewater and all of the others. They've been there. Look at her cattle futures. I mean, she did better with cattle proportionately than people that have been in the cattle business all their lives and have made millions in the cattle. She did better than they did, and she never did it before. I wonder how that happened.
Well, that was Donald Trump in North Carolina last night. He's actually accurate in everything he said. It's amazing that Hillary Clinton actually did say yesterday that she thinks, you know, she might keep Loretta Lynch. Of course, Loretta Lynch, who, you know, is not going to recuse herself from the Hillary email scandal prosecution. She'll do whatever the FBI says, and now the FBI says they're not going to prosecute. And Hillary now announces that she just might keep Loretta Lynch. It really does stink to high heaven. We'll be back with your calls right after this.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
I want to take a moment to share two opportunities that we have to become a more powerful voice for Christian America. One is in our radio division. A door has opened for us to increase our outreach in 8 radio markets with a potential of 2.5 million new listeners. We'll take truth to families in places like New Orleans, Corpus Christi, Texas, Jacksonville, Florida, Lexington, Kentucky, and Memphis, Tennessee. The other opportunity is the American Family Studios full-length documentary titled The God Who Speaks, Reaffirming Biblical Authority. Would you please consider a financial gift to help us offset the cost of these projects? Also, please pray that God might use these projects to restore America's moral foundations.
For more information, visit AFR.net or call 800-326-4543.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
For generations, false teachers have crept into the family of God, corrupting the church from the inside out. On Truth for Life, Alistair Begg presents biblical instruction on protecting the household of faith. Hear a study in 1 Timothy, Monday through Friday, on Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR Talk and online at AFR.net.
So 10 years ago, Katrina hits the Gulf Coast, and my dad and I thought it'd be cool to go and help somebody start sharing that passion, that vision that God laid on our hearts. And shortly thereafter, American Family Radio was telling the nation about what God was doing through 8 Days of Hope. And that trip that was meant to be 5, 6, 7, 8 people was 684 people in December of 2005. We rebuilt 84 homes. And we were just so excited about what God was doing. Since then, 1,700 homes have been built, rebuilt across the country. We have taken 17,000 volunteers, hundreds and hundreds of lives changed forever because they've given their hearts to Jesus, either serving on a missions trip or because they were a homeowner that we were serving during 8 Days of Hope. And now a new ministry, Hope Reigns, has sprung out of this ministry called 8 Days of Hope. Go to our website, 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Barack Obama once infamously promised to fundamentally transform America. The extent of that transformation was evident yesterday as the director of the nation's top law enforcement agency made the case that Hillary Clinton had violated the law, but declined to recommend that she be prosecuted for doing so. Former federal prosecutors like Rudy Giuliani and Michael Mukasey strongly disagree that the case against the former Secretary of State couldn't be successfully tried. Hillary may have avoided an indictment, but the politicized Obama-Lynch Justice Department certainly has been. Of greatest concern is the predictable consequence of this outrageous miscarriage of justice. The Clinton precedent will doubtless be seized upon by many others who will handle classified information in an extremely careless manner and with impunity. If so, the extensive damage to the national security that Hillary has perpetrated will be only the beginning. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Although we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information.
Everything I did was permitted by law and regulation. I had one device.
Secretary Clinton used several different servers. And she also used numerous mobile devices to send and to read email on that personal domain.
I used a single account for convenience. Obviously, these years later, it doesn't look so convenient.
My use of personal email was allowed by the State Department.
None of these emails should have been on any kind of unclassified system.
And I never sent nor received any information that was classified at the time it was sent and received. I never sent classified material on my email, and I never received any that was marked classified.
110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined by the owning agency to contain classified information at the time they were sent or received.
What, like with a cloth or something? Well, no.
The email software was removed. That didn't remove the email content. The effect was that millions of email fragments ended up in the server's unused or slack space.
I didn't have to turn over anything. I chose to turn over 55,000 pages of my emails.
This helped us recover work-related emails that were not among the 30,000 that were produced to state.
I'm sorry, I've taken responsibility.
Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case.
All right, that was unbelievably, that was a montage prepared by CNN. And my question then is to you, those of you that are listening, I understand many of you are hardcore Clinton, you don't like Clinton, you haven't for years, and obviously it's going to pile on for you. And so I'm not necessarily interested in talking to you, but I'm wanting to know if the people in your world, in your sphere of influence, and some of you who have supported Hillary, some of you who know millennials, people know people that are not paying all that much attention, what effect do you think it's going to have on them? I really don't know. And so that's the question. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. Let's go to Ohio and talk to Robert. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Good morning. Aunt Robert, do I understand that you voted for Hillary Clinton in the primary, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm listening. I was just saying I actually served under Bill Clinton in the military, and I've been a Clinton supporter since then. And, again, voted in 08 against Obama, voted for her in a primary against Bernie. And right now I'm really shooken up by what I'm hearing because, you know, months previous to this, all I heard from Hillary was, you know, she's done what's right. And now I'm hearing that she knows she didn't do everything right, and it kind of shakes my faith in her right now. I mean, you know, before today, I was going into the polls and checking Hillary off as my vote. Now I'm thinking to myself, I'm a little on a fence, and I got, you know, her on one side, who I'm shaky about now, who I was sure about yesterday, and then I got Donald Trump, who has no experience whatsoever. So I'm definitely on a fence at this point in time.
Well, Robert, I think a lot of people are confused this year, and it's a hard decision. I would say this, this you probably know, you know, because you're in the military, that if you should mishandle classified information, your head would be on the chopping block. And there's just one person I was reading. This is a story from yesterday. The Obama Department of Justice has prosecuted more government officials for leaking classified information than all past administrations combined. I'm just going to mention one person. His name is Jason Bresler. He sent one email via unsecured server. I think he's a Marine. Yeah, he's a Marine. He was trying to save the lives, I remember this story, of fellow Marines. And so he sent something on an unsecured server, and he was removed from the Marines in 2015. He was deployed four times before that since 2002, and now he's been removed from the Marines because he sent one email over an unsecured server. I mean, that's just wrong, Robert, and you know it is. And you know if you had done what she's done, you would be in a world of hurt in the military. So
I definitely have to agree with you, but the point I think that you just made is, you know, sending emails to actually leaking information. I think that's a different verbiage there.
Yeah.
And I really can't put her in that category as leaking information because she sent email on an unsecured server at this time.
Well, the only problem with that, Robert, is that, you know, that I'm sure you heard Director Comey say that they don't have evidence that her accounts were directly hacked, but they do have evidence that the people that she was emailing with, in other words, who had access to her server and to her email address, were actually hacked by foreign hackers. And also that she very carelessly used her devices, even in countries which were hostile to us, where hackers were rampant. And you know that as Secretary of State, she's got to know that. So anyway, I think you are right to question. You probably know how I feel about it. So I don't want to jump on you with my opinions, except that I think you're right to question. Many of us have had a problem with her lying and her integrity for a very long time. And I'm sorry that this is a new revelation to you, but I think that you're onto something to question whether you can trust her. And I appreciate your honesty. And I appreciate your call.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, my pleasure, Robert. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you'll continue to listen. Let's go to Louisiana and talk to David. Good morning, David.
Good morning. I'm not sure if this was shown on all networks, but I'm sure it wasn't. But about 3 weeks ago, Obama was on NBC on a Sunday morning show and made the exact same comment as Comey, saying, without intent, there is no crime. So if he had no communications with the White House, and which I don't believe to begin with, but, you know, it's so coincidental that they came out with the same conclusion, but Obama had his conclusion 3 weeks ago.
No, I did not hear that, David.
Did you catch that, Joe?
No, we should look for that. You think it's on MSNBC? Is that what you said?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
about
all right.
3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago.
All right. We'll check that. And here's the other coincidence: is that Bill Clinton, you know, just happens to meet with Loretta Lynch last week on the airport tarmac. He just happens to meet with her, and then. Also, the day that Comey, yesterday, he's making the announcement that there'll be no charges, is the day that Hillary Clinton flies to North Carolina, in Air Force One, by the way, and stands at a podium behind the presidential seal, which, by the way, is a violation. The presidential seal, when a president goes out and campaigns for his own reelection or for someone else, he never stands behind a podium with a presidential seal. The idea is to keep him president of the United States, president of all the people, make that non-political. Then he goes out on the stump. He's not presenting himself on Air Force One with a presidential seal. And yet they did both of those things. And Hillary Clinton actually was allowed to stand at the podium with a presidential seal. It just seems to me that there's a lot of collusion going on here. The timing is just way too coincidental. David, thanks a lot. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. Let's go to Raymond in Texas. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning. I think that people who have directed their lives based on Judeo-Christian values, you know, right or wrong, and personal accountability, you have a little bit of critical thinking will see through the deception that's going on right now. But I think, and the people I know around here that are Democrats and liberals, are so afraid of a Republican president, and for all kinds of reasons that I don't understand, I think also that they're not used to critical thinking. I think also that most of them don't have a lot of personal responsibility. I think many of them will just defer, well, the expert said she did nothing wrong, and then that's good enough for me, and we're going to vote for her anyway. That's what I'm hearing from the people I know here in the Dallas area who are true liberals, and they're my friends, but they're true liberals. And unfortunately, I think in the long run, I don't think it'll make much of a difference in the result. They will still vote for her no matter what. They're so afraid of a Republican president going against the things that they want, and they want their agenda to be implemented so badly that in the end, I don't think it's going to make a much difference. I mean, just rationalization and justification for what she's done, and they're going to vote for her anyway.
Hey, Raymond, when you in these conversations, do you get the sense that they actually listen to Comey, that they know what he said, or they just heard the blurb, you know, through Yahoo News or whatever that the FBI's not bringing charges? Do you think they know what he actually said? Because he, as you well know, he laid out a case against her before he said he wasn't going to prosecute.
I think they hear that, I think they understand that intellectually, but I think in the end for them, it doesn't matter because they're more afraid of what a Republican president would do than what a dishonest. And some of the people I talk with, they know, and they tell me, we know she's a liar, we know she's dishonest, but we're going to vote for her anyway. We're just too afraid of what a Republican president would do. And so in the end, it's all about getting what they want and I don't know how to explain it. Maybe I shouldn't say it, but not being accountable for what they're doing and for what anybody does, like what's comfortable and convenient. So I think they hear it, and they hear it intellectually. They're all intelligent folks, but they rationalize in the end that a Republican president would be worse for their view or their agenda than, you know, having a crooked, dishonest Hillary Clinton as president.
Yeah. Okay, Raymond, I appreciate your report, even if I don't like it. All right, let's go to Pat in Texas. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. How are you, Miss Sandy?
I'm good. How are you?
God bless. I'm doing well. Hey, I'm about to head through the gate over here in Fort Hood, Texas. I was telling your producer, bottom line up front, in the military, you have something called spillages. I work in the S6s, basically the comms community. And I'm going to tell you something. We work hand-in-hand with the S2. That's the intel community. And there's no way in God's green earth. There's no way in God's green earth that Hillary Clinton was going to be able to have that situation go on where she gets tapped. She gets trained to basically designate stuff as classified, non-classified, and what level of classification as Secretary of State. That's a ball-faced lie right there that she did not know. You caught her in plenty of lies that she said. First, that she didn't transfer anything. Then she says she didn't receive anything. Then she says nothing was marked at the time. Then we have an email coming out saying that she did tell her people to take off the markings. All those, in and of themselves, would have sent me under the jail.
Yeah, it sent exactly.
General Petraeus under the jail. The guy couldn't even stay in for CIA. Now, here's the next piece. What you did see is Director Comey not say anything about the Clinton crime family network or whatever global initiative they have and how she sold the office. That's going to be the next shoe to drop. I still believe it's going to be Joe Biden parachuted in. I think that they're setting them up for the big letdown to get rid of Clinton politics in the Democratic Party forever, and they're trying to keep Joe Biden on to be a third term of Barack Obama with, as a nod to Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren as his VP. Go back to December. Joe Biden went over to Elizabeth Warren's offices during Christmas break to have lunch with her. They're already setting it up, and they're giving her enough rope to hang herself.
Well, I don't disagree, Pat, that they would like that to happen, whether it's going to or not. My thoughts yesterday when Comey made that announcement were, the good news is if they don't bring an indictment, she will stay the candidate. And I think that there's a better chance of beating her than Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden he's much more pleasant. I don't think he's any better and because nobody's really explored his record. But I think that, but we'll see. I agree with you that in the works, probably in their heart of hearts, many of the Democratic leadership wish that she were not the candidate because she is such a dreadful personality, no question about it, and has such a bad, horrible record of dishonesty and also just no accomplishments. Pat, as always, it's good to hear from you. Oh, man. Clint, can you do 30 seconds? Clint in Texas, can you give us 30 seconds?
Yeah, you know, I have to ask, she's not even president yet. What we need to ask ourselves is not how horrible this is, because it is horrible, but what else could she get away with? What else is she capable of getting away with if she became president? Look at all Obama's done. This is horrifying.
Yes, I think you're right, Clint. And I think that's the reason why many people are supporting Trump, because they understand that the choices are more stark than it might appear. Clint, thanks a lot. Thanks to all of you for your insights. And we'll be doing more talking this week, I promise. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio. American Family Radio.